Let's review what we did last time in the greater context and framework of the sugya is who authored our Mishnah and how our Mishnah squares off Yachloku B'Shvua with other Tanoim. We did the sugya of Mana Shlishi. Mana Shlishi, if you remember, is based on a Mishnah later on in Bava Metzia on Daf Lamed Zayin that records Machlokus between the Chachom and Rabbi Yossi about the case of two people that deposited each a sum of money in the hands of a third person, of a shomer, a nifkad. The two mafkidim, one of them gave a mana, the other gave two manos, and now we have total confusion. Each one is claiming that he was the one who gave the two manos, and the mana shlishi belongs to him. Rabbi Yossi says we have to take the entire sum of money, and we have to leave it, lock it up in escrow until Eliyahu HaNavi comes. And we said that according to the Mardechai at least, leaving it in escrow means it has to be in the hands of the Beis Din. We can't leave it in the hands of the Nifkad. He obviously admits it's not his, and hence it has to be left in the hands of the Beis Din. The Chacham, on the other hand, say, look, as far as the first one and the second one is concerned, we have no doubt about it. Reuven certainly is legally entitled to that mana, Shimon to his mana. We're only going to leave the third mana, Ashi Yovo Eliyahu. And the Gemara now says that there's no way you can reconcile Rabbi Yossi with our Mishnah. Lema Masnisin Delo Ki Rabbi Yossi. So that we're on the top now of Daf Gimel Amud Aleph, and we're counting down approximately 10 lines. Di Ki Rabbi Yossi HaOmar Im Kein Ma Hifsid Ramai. The Gemara really emphasizes the whole raison d'etre, you know, the philosophy of Rabbi Yossi. If we're going to apply the principle that each one, Reuven and Shimon, will get a mana, then there's no motivation for the Ramai, the one who's cheating here and deliberately fabricating and saying that he gave the mana. There's no motivation for him to come forward and confess. But if we confiscate even his mana, we don't know whose it is, then, says Rabbi Yossi, it's a hefsed for the Ramai. So elakol yamunach ad sheyov Eliyahu. And in that sense, if yamunach is a great tool to bring about a hodah on the part of the Ramai, then maybe in the case of Shnai Mochsen B'Talis, if we hold on to the Talis, maybe what's going to happen is that one of the two Bali Dinim will admit that he only has half the Talis, and he has no claim on the other half of the Talis. Tosus, back on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, asks, how does the Gemara even imply an analogy between Mana Shlishi and Shnai Mochsen B'Talis when the fundamental underlying principle of Talis is that they're both Ochazin? In the case of Mana Shlishi, it's the Nifkad who's holding on to the money. So neither one of the two Mafkidim can claim any sort of Chazaka. And Tosus answers that the Nifkad is Toface on behalf of both of these. He's not, his Tvisa is not his own personal Tvisa. He's not claiming it's mine. He's grabbing onto the money on behalf of the Mafkidim. And in that sense, he's like the extended arm of the Mafkidim, of Reuven and Shimon, and therefore they are considered Mukzakim. We pointed out at great length that Tvisa is a Maisa Tvisa, it's not a Raya's Tvisa. In the case of Talis, we believe that each one is holding on to half the Talis. That proves that it belongs to him, that half. I mean, Tosus calls it an Anan Sadi. But in the case of Mana Shlishi, it's impossible to say that each one has an Anan Sadi on the third Mana. But nevertheless, there's a Maisa Tfis on behalf of these two, on behalf of Reuven and Shimon on the Mana Shlishi. And therefore, the Gemara thinks by analogy, the halacha, the dictum, the ruling Psakya that's appropriate should be Yachloku. They should take the Mana Shlishi and divide it into two. Now the Gemara takes a step back and says, Elamai Rabbanon. How I said, we're just reviewing the Gemara of Thursday, but you'll join us.
Please.
Do you have a Gemara Bava Metzia? Or
I will get one. Thank you.
See if you can get access to one. So now the Gemara says, and according to the Chachamim, life makes sense. You know, everything works out well. I mean, that's not true, because even according to the Chachamim, we have a problem. The Chachamim are saying that the Man Shlishi is Yemuna. So they're not saying Yachloku on the Man Shlishi. Right? The Man Shlishi is the same as the Talis. We have two people claiming ownership on the Man Shlishi. And in that sense, we should certainly say Yachloku. And yet the Chachamim say Yemuna. So therefore, the Gemara says, "Alamai Rabbanan di Amri Rabbanan." Hashar yehe munach hachavil. Not only the Manish Shlishi is left in escrow until Eliyahu Hanavi could come. Well, Hanavi, the case of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, is exactly kishar domi the sveikahi. We have a suffix on the talis, we have a suffix on the Manish Shlishi. And in this case, since Tosfos establishes that on the Manish Shlishi they're both muksakim, therefore we should paskin Yachloku. So the last thing that we did in Mirtz Hashem right before we had the break for Shabbat Shuva, you know, in my life there's everything before I gave the Tshuva Drasha and my life after the Tshuva Drasha. Of course, the Tshuva Drasha was such a heavy experience for me. So the Gemara said the following. This is where we left it off on Thursday. So we're on Daf Gimel Amud Aleph. I Amrit Bishleim Rabbanon. When do we apply the principle of Yachloku? That's only when it's feasible. That the Chalukah could be a true Chalukah, that each one really owns half the talis. That's not so in the case of Manish Shlishi. We know for sure, without a shadow of a doubt, that the Manish Shlishi belongs to either Reuven or Shimon, one of the two Mafkidim. Devadai Dehai Mona Dechad Minayuhu. In other words, the hands of the Bezdin are tied, so to speak. There's no way that they can say Yachloku when they know that by giving half of the money to so-and-so, we don't know who the so-and-so is, but one of these two Balidinim, you're definitely cheating the other Balidin because the money belongs in its entirety to either Reuven or Shimon. So when you split that money Shlishi, you're really taking at least half of the money away from Reuven or from Shimon. Is Ami Rabbanan? The Rabbanan say that in this case, Bezdin can't do anything. They're basically frozen in their tracks. And therefore, Yehimunach Hachiyov Elio, and again, we're learning according to the Mordechai, that Hachiyov Elio means they leave it in escrow in the hands of Bezdin until Elio can come and testify who is the rightful owner of this mana. But Hoch, in the case of Talis, the Muchzakus on the Talis is a whole different type of Muchzakus. It means that we really believe that each one who's muchzak on the talis, on half the talis, equal maybe the travayuhu, that really the talis should be split because each one owns half the talis. So when we split the talis, that's a chaluka yechol lios emes. Is Amri Rabbanon, and here the Rabbanon would agree, palgi b'shvua, we should split the talis, have everyone take a shvua. We had a long discussion last week about why a shvua. So that's okay. So let's take a pause here. So just to summarize, as far as the Rabbanan and Manish Shlishi is concerned, since it's Eina Chaluka Yecholios Emes, we understand clearly why the Psak of Yachloku would not apply. In our mission of what? Of Shnayim Ochsim V'Talis, where it's very possible, it's very plausible that each one owns half the Talis, then the Muchzakus generates a halacha of Yachloku. And that's a Chaluki Yecholios Emes. But in the case of Manish Shlishi, where we know that the Manish Shlishi belongs either to Reuven or to Shimon, we cannot split the talis. So basically, we're like frozen in our tracks, and Bezdin has to say, well, you know, we can't say Kol D'Olam Gavar, Tosa says, because they're both Muzakim. Kol D'Olam Gavar is a total Siluk Bezdin, where Bezdin says we're not getting involved. Well, that Bezdin doesn't have the right to do, and say, let them, you know, kill each other because they're both muxakim. So when you have muxakim, each one has a right to protect his muxakus. We're not going to be able to finalize by giving everyone half of the money, which means palgi yachloku, because enachaluki, we're giving half of the money to a vade ramai. That we can't do. So basically, Bezdin is involved. The responsibility is incumbent upon the shoulders of Bezdin of Tzedek Tzedek Tiridov. But there's nothing they can do. They have no rias and no way of being machriya the suffer. So Yosef, we're just reviewing the last thing that we did last week in order to begin in about 2 minutes. We'll begin the official discussion. Okay then. Ella Iyamet Rabbi Yossi. If you're going to tell me that our Mishnah reflects the Shita Rabbi Yossi, and what does Rabbi Yossi do in the case of Shnayim Shefkidu Zemon of Zemasayim? Hakol Yemunach. According to Rabbi Yossi, Hakol Yemunach is Hashta. Now the Bevadai Ika Mona Lamar, the Ika Mona Lamar, Omer Rabbi Yossi Yemunach Hachiyom Elio. In other words, Rabbi Yossi is not willing to award Reuven one mana and Shimon one mana, even though Reuven certainly deserves to receive one mana and Shimon certainly deserves to receive, but there's no question about that. Rabbi Yossi says, no, we have to take the money out of the possession of Reuven, out of possession of Shimon, and the Psak of Beis Din now is going to motivate the Ramai to come forward and say, this is a losing endeavor for me to let things go as they are. I'm going to lose my mana. And therefore he'd rather come forward and admit the truth. So we have a motivating factor through Yemunach. Yemunach becomes now a method, a medium for Beis Din to establish that the Ramai is going to come forward and confess his truth. Is therefore in the case of Shnayim Ochsu Vitalis, the Ikal Amemet the Chad Minayuhu Lo Kol Shkein. How much more so should we want to somehow motivate the liar, you know, to come forward and confess that he grabbed on to someone else's talis? How much more so should we take that talis and apply the principle of Yemunach? The only thing is, Rabbi Osei, keep in mind that the Yemunach, as the Gemara is going to develop it in a minute, in the case of Shnayim Ochsim is a little bit different than the case of Mana Shlishi, because in the case of Yemunach and the Talis, the cheat, you know, the thief who grabbed onto someone else's Talis, what does he lose by Yemunach? You know, there's no vested interest here. In the case of Mana Shlishi, if Rabbi Yossi's logic is that he's going to lose a Mana that's definitely his, even if he's a liar on the extra Mana, that'll motivate him to come forward and confess the truth. But in the case of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, where, let's say, we're afraid that Shimon grabbed onto Reuven's talis and now he's claiming he found it, what does he lose if you can apply the principle of Yemunah? So that point that we have to work out. But let's just also remind ourselves of the Rashi on Daf Beis Amud Aleph, back at the beginning of Masechta Bava Metzia. Rashi says, Dibra Maschil Mekach Umemka, it's the last Rashi on the Beis Amud Aleph. And Rashi says, about three lines up before the end, Avol ze omer aniyar aktia v'ze omer aniyar aktia. If, let's say, they're holding on to a sweater, let's call it, and each one claims, I wove the sweater, in such a case, lo yachloku. Rashi says there would be no din of Chalukah. And the reason for that is, even though the Shnayim Ochsim be'ariga, nevertheless the Vadai Chad Minai Ramai, which means that we cannot even postulate the possibility, entertain the fact that there's a Chaluki Cholios Emes here, because one person wove the entire talis. And therefore, says Rashi, in such a case, Tehei Munachas Achiyov Elio. And I believe that Rashi here on Daf Beis Amud Aleph is reflecting our Gemara here on Daf Gimel, that the hands of Beis Din are tied. They can't pass any achlokin award half to him and half to him, when they know that by definition they are taking money out of the hands of the rightful owner and putting it into the hands of a Ramai, of someone who's a thief. That they can't do. In the case of Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, at least there's a possibility that both of them own half the talis. So the Chalukah Yecholiyos Sevis, we're not ripping out the possession of someone who's rightfully in the owner of the person.
No, but only in Shnayim Ochsim is it possible that it belongs, that they both got there at the same time.
Correct.
There's no Ramai. All these other cases are not like that.
Right, so the case of Bada Shlishi or the case of Anir Agtia, in both those cases, the Chalukah is EF Sholichol Yosemes, there's a Vade Ramai, and Rashi says that whenever there's a Vade Ramai and two people holding on to something, or in the case of Bada Shlishi, as Tosus points out, the Nifkat is holding on behalf of the two Mafkidim to the Bada Shlishi, in such a case, Bezin has to freeze the frame, so to speak. It has to be left in escrow in the hands of Bezdin, and that's called Yemunah. Again, I just reemphasize, because Yosef, you weren't here, but you heard it last week already, that we cannot apply the principle of Kolion Gavar, because then Bezdin is saying, we're not getting involved at all, and let nature take its course. Who's ever the biggest bully, he'll take possession of this. That's a case where there's no rias whatsoever. In head there rias, then Bezdin has the right to be misalik themselves. But when you have two mutual rios, because the Nifkat is holding on to this Bada Shlishi on behalf of both of them, in such a case, Bezdin can't say, I'm not getting involved, and rather let Eina Shvag, you know, let Nem the cup and Shlug Devat, you know, we can't say that they're going to kill each other, and Bezdin's in non-involvement. But on the other hand, Bezdin doesn't know how to take the next step, because the only possibility here in Mamun Abutu Basafik would be to say Yachloku, and then we're taking money out of the hands of the rightful owner and putting it into the hands of the Ramay, that
because
we can't
Hazak
do.
Was a rayon because he's holding it. You can't take it away from it.
So that was a long discussion. Exactly. In Bada Shlishi, there are two ways of understanding the Nifkad holding on to that Bada Shlishi. Let's just go back again to review the one line of this long Tosus V'Yachloku on the Beis of an Aleph, where Tosus says that V'chein Bada Shlishi is about seven lines down. Dimidame b'gemara l'talus, we're at a havamina, that just like in Talus we say Yachloku, so to Bada Shlishi would say Yachloku. Where's the mutual muchzakus? Zaktaisis chashiv ahusha nifkad tofes. The fact that nifkas is tofes is considered becheska shneyan. It's a kind of chazak by proxy. It's almost as if the nifkat is the extended arm of the I would call it almost a vicarious chazakah. Now, if you'll ask me, is that chazakah equal to the chazak of Shnayim Ochsim Betalos? The answer is an absolute flat no, because Tosus points out earlier in this Tosus that the chazakah of Talis is Anan Sadi. That Anan Sadi is absolutely inapplicable in the case of Bada Shlishi. You may want to argue that the Nifkat is, if you're asking him on whose behalf is he holding it vicariously, the answer is he's holding it on behalf of both of them. And how much more so, Yosef, remember the sugya of Kricha Achas, if you hold according to that Man Diyoma. But to say that feast is a raya either to Reuven or to Shimon, that's ridiculous. We don't know whether or not this Bada Shlishi belongs to Reuven or to Shimon. So the chiddush of this Gemara here that we're studying now is that as far as Muchzakus is concerned, Bezdin has to get involved. Why? Because if we were to allow for a Kolion Gavar, you know, I call it a non-involvement theory, and one person beats up the other because he's more powerful, then what you're doing is, you're just saying, well, Bezdin, I don't care about the muchzakus here, it's like an arva that's out there in the docks, you know, go, let the law of the jungle rule supreme. That's not possible. Bezdin has to guarantee tzedek tirdo. But what do they do in a case where they get to a point where they can't allow, you know, hefkeres and anarchy, because there are dinim of muksakim. However, the muksakis doesn't prove a thing, and we know that there's a ramai, so we're at a stalemate. What are we going to do? We can't move even one step further. There's nothing that we can do. We have nothing under the sun. The only thing that can help us is the Urim V'Tumim, or a Navi, or Eliyahu. And by the way, when it says Eliyahu, I'm convinced that it means Eliyahu as a Navi. I mean, there's no way that Eliyahu as a Talmud Chacham could paskin the Shaila for us. There are no riots. Nobody can prove who owns the Bada Shlishi. You've got to have a Nevuah here. And that's what it means that we should hold it off until we get a Nevuah.
It's
but
basically a platitude saying we're not doing anything about it and we're not giving it to anybody. I mean,
I don't think so. That's what I'm trying to point out to. If Bezdin wants to say we're not getting involved, called the old government.
No, we're not giving it to anybody and we're taking it away. I mean,
correct.
Because they really count on Eliyahu?
I think so. I think they're hoping at some point in the history, in the future history, we'll be able to resolve this. And that's going to be tzedek tzedek tirdof. So when there's no way out,
that's righteous, and the future will resolve.
Right.
Otherwise, they would.
That's what righteousness requires here. Don't allow anyone to grab onto this, just because he's the tough guy, because that would undermine justice. On the other hand, don't split it, because then Bezdin is getting involved actively in awarding a ganav half of the money. That we can't do either. So the best of all. You know, more possibilities here for Bezdin to, on the one hand, be involved is to hold, it's to freeze the situation as is. That's what I think is going on. Now the Gemara says, "Afilu tema Rabbi Yossi, I could in fact square our Mishnah with Rabbi Yossi. Hasam over there, vade ika ramai. When does Rabbi Yossi force us to take money out of the hands of the rightful owner?" Because again, Rabbi Yossi is applying Yemunah to all three monos. That's because it's a Vadei Ika Ramai. That's the only time that Rabbi Yossi will push the agenda to take money out of the hands of the rightful owner, under the assumption that that will be a method, a means by which we can achieve a Hodas Bal Din. We can guarantee, hopefully, that one of the two Mafkidim will confess his crime, so to speak, his fabrication of the truth. He'll rescind his claim on the third mana in order to make to at least, it's a sensible decision, I suppose, to at least get the one mana that he owns. He doesn't want to lose a mana in this deal. You know, he was tempted, you know, by the Eight Sahara to want to get another mana. You know, he has an opportunity to steal another mana. So if he realizes that, you know, at the end of the day, what's going to happen is he ends up with losing a mana. It's not worth it for him to give up a mana just on the outside chance that he'll gain another mana. So here, in this case, crime doesn't pay. But hacha, that's only in a case where there's a vadai ramai. Here, in the case of talis, mi yemer dikarama em travayu vani adodi agbahua, it's always possible they both picked it up simultaneously. Again, we have to see how that works out in the case of Mekach u'Memkar, but at least in the case of Mitzia, we understand how that works out. It's very plausible that they both picked up the talis at the same time. And in such a case, even Rabbi Yossi would agree that we can paskin yachloku, because we're not definitely violating this law, you know, this overriding principle of Bezdin can't award something to a ganav. Maybe there is no Rama. There's no ganav. Now I want to read the Inami and then come back to the Rashba. There's a very important Rashba here in the sugya that we want to discuss. But first, the Gemara says the following: Inami. Perhaps we can offer another distinction between the case of Rabbi Yossi of Yemunach and our Mishnah of Shnayim Osim. And the answer is that in the case of Mana Shlishi, Kanes Le Rabbi Yossi Lamat L'Ramai Ki Hechi Deludi Hacha Mai Pseida Ika Le Deludi. So in the first answer, the Gemara says we have no problem with Yachloku, and even Rabbi Yossi is on board, as long as we have a possibility. You know, no one can tell us with certainty that we're violating this rule of Bezdin awarding money to a thief and taking money out of the possession of its rightful owner. The second approach says that Rabbi Yossi only falls back on Yemunach if it's going to be an effective method or means to an end, to motivate the Ramai to come forward with a confession. When the Ramai stands to lose money, that's when Rabbi Yossi activates his principle of Yemunah. But in a case where Yemunah is not going to achieve any goal, which means the Ramai is not losing anything, because in the case of a talis, we're talking about a metziah that was found, so that's not called a knas. You know, you're not imposing any sort of penalty on him. The Ramai ends up, even after Yemunah, in the exact situation that he found himself in before Yemunah. So what good is it? What have you gained in your attempt to get the Ramai to be motivated to come forward and confess his fabrication? there's a fundamental difference here, Rabbi Osai, between the first approach of the Gemara and the second. In the first approach of the Gemara is getting down to essentials, according to Rabbi Yossi, of psak, meaning what are the rules of psak that govern mamana mutal besafek. And the rule basically is that if we have a situation of avadei ramai, then Rabbi Yossi applies the psak of yemunah. If it's not avadei ramai, then we still have room to possibly paskin yachloku. That's not the inami. The inami is basically saying that Rabbi Yossi himself is an advocate of yachloku. That really is the major primary rule of psak in the case of Momen Amuto B'Sofek. Rabbi Yossi is going to have what I call a takana derabanan, so to speak. They're going to have an enactment on the part of the chachamim that we're going to suspend the accurate and most appropriate psak in the case of Sofek. What is going to postpone, or I should say suspend, the psak of Yachloku? It's using the situation and changing it around in such a way that the psak will now motivate the Ramai to confess his crime. If the method of Yemunach doesn't work, if it will not in any way be successful, it's not going to get the Ramai to confess his crime, then drop the ball. Then go back to the Iker Psak. The Iker Psak in the case of Momen Amuto B'Sofek is Yachloku. It's not that Rabbi Yossi has a problem with Yachloku. He's very inhibited about Yachloku because Bezdin's getting involved in a possibility of giving money to someone, taking money out of someone's rightful, out of his pocket and giving it to a Ramai. That's not Rabbi Yossi's issue. Rabbi Yossi's issue is, for the sake of ultimate truth, Tzedek Tzedek Tirdov, if we have a method that will successfully, the ship will be brought to the sea of truth, of justice, the winds will blow towards the dock, then we're going to suspend what really is the genuine psak. The genuine psak is Yachloku. But Rabbi Yossi says, you know what, let's suspend Yachloku, because Yachloku is not the best ideal situation. There may be a possibility that the entire sum of money belongs to one person, so why do a Yachloku? I have a better method, says Rabbi Yossi. I'm going to be mafsid the Ramai. That's called a knas in the language of the Gemara. If it will cause a suffering of, the pain of losing money to the Ramai, that will achieve, hopefully, the goal of tzedek, of absolute truth. Why take the path of Yachloku? I have a better path to advocate. And that is to motivate the thief to confess his crime. The Gemara says if you cannot motivate the thief in the case of a mitzia, then, you know what? Let's go back to square one. And square one is Yachloku.
You say it's to motivate the thief to confess. The way I see it in Rashi, it's to motivate the thief not to do this to begin with, not to be a crook.
Ah, okay, that's even more profound. Right, if the thief knows exactly what's coming around the bend. Rashi's assuming the thief is a big Talmud Chacham.
If you want to be ultra logical, it doesn't really motivate the thief to confess. It can actually motivate the non-thief to confess, because at least he gets 100 out of 100. There's no reason for the thief to confess more than there is for the non-thief to confess.
You're quoting a parsha in Melachim, the parsha of Shlomo Melech, right? Because she at the end of the day said, give her the baby, right? Even though she was the rightful mother of it.
Because he didn't want to destroy it. But here, the thief can steer the other guy down. There's no reason for him to confess. He can wait for the other guy to say, I'm the thief.
Right. Let's see who blinks first, you say.
Whereas the way I see it is just to motivate to say, don't get involved and grab things, because then none of you will get it. So unless you're...
And where did you see this in Rashi?
The last wide line at the beginning of the narrow lines.
Oh. Okay, let's see.
In Ma Hifsid Haramai.
Okay, Ma Hifsid Haramai. The Lama Yoda Harekibil Eshalom. I read this Rashi, but I didn't see. You're seeing a depth here in Rashi I didn't see.
No, I saw it actually explicitly also if they wanted to.
Kibbalat Shalom doesn't mean that he received what he deserves. Kibbalat Shalom means he it worked.
It worked, yeah.
Well, where does it say again? Velama Yoda Hare Kibel Eshalo.
Yeah, that means that the ruse worked, and he's going to profit here.
What if we'd say Yachlok? Are you talking on the Moni Shlishi?
If it's 100, right?
If we'd split the Moni Shlishi, let's go again. We have to.
I thought you were dealing here.
Let's go through the Rashi. The Rashi says. The Rabbi Yossi the Mafkid is going to say, so Zemon of the fine, and Kobe Tanakama, no same was Zemon of the Zemon of Ashay, and Gunaj, and Omar Rabbi Yossi.
Shalom Yehe Kol Ever, Gemara says it. Shavu is it's okay. No.
You're talking about Shavu.
So it's Mashallah, okay, so I saw it basically. This one says Shalom Yehe is Kol Echad Taikif, not Rashi. And then he says, the Iker Biyasi Mahipsud Ramoi, I assume they meant with the tkifa, with the grabbing.
What? Again, are you back to the Rashi that you pointed out before?
No, it's a different Rashi. Yeah, no, I'm off with the Rashi, it was the Gemara. The way I read the Gemara is that it's transitioning from the Shvu, where he says that it's the Kansa Chamem, that you shouldn't go grabbing things, that's why we want to discourage you by doing the Shvu. So he says, but if Iker Biyasi, what did he lose by grabbing?
Are you up to the line that says Leva Maslisa Delo Krebiosi?
Yeah, one and a half lines later.
So what the Gemara is saying here is the following, that
I'm just saying, I don't think it means my hifsid by not being mother, it's by my hifsid by grabbing. I grabbed it and I got my 100. So why shouldn't I grab?
Well, so just one second, Sam.
Okay. When you know what, forget what I said.
No. Just one second. I have to clarify one point over here. The words in Kain Mahifsid Ramai are referring to Manashlishi. But the Gemara wants to...
Yes. Mahifsid by grabbing.
Well, again, I don't know what you mean by grabbing, because Manashlishi, nobody's... Maybe you mean by claiming?
Okay.
Because the word grabbing,
by claiming.
That goes
by
back claiming. To Talos.
By claiming.
Oh. In Kain Mahifsid Ramai, right, but in other words, it went... You know, he's got a carte blanche. What should inhibit him from claiming that the third mana is mine?
So what he's trying to do, Rabbi Yossi, is to inhibit him from starting to do this mess, not trying to pressure him.
Well, again, Rabbi Yossi is facing the following situation. What's happening? There's Reuven and Shimon. These are the facts on the ground, and each one is claiming that the third mana is mine. So Rabbi Yossi says that if we were to apply the principle of let's give him a mana,
and people will keep doing this, the next crook will also.
What's gonna motivate him to come forward and be moda? Because you haven't penalized.
Why not say what's gonna motivate him not to do this to begin with? Because to be moda, it's a stare down situation. It's not motivating him. It's a stare down. Right.
Okay, no, you have a good question. Maybe he'll hope that the other one will... Again, what is the... In the case of Shlomo Melch, the other one will be... Because the other one is going to be motivated because they...
He doesn't want that compromise.
They don't want the baby to be split into two.
This guy would be happy enough with a compromise.
But in this case, Rabbi Yossi is arguing that if we're going to apply... You know, the principle of Yei Munach to the third, not only to the third mono, but to the first two monos, then the thief has to be...
The guy's happy enough.
He has to be an idiot here, because he started with a mono, now he's ending up with zero. Now you're saying maybe the other one will admit. Well, why would the other one come... What would motivate the other one, when he knows the truth is with him, to come forward and say...
Because otherwise he gets nothing.
Okay, but still, you know, he's...
The same thing that would motivate the crook. The crook is not an honest guy. The crook is motivated by losing. That guy's losing too.
I understand, but there's this psychological element why should I confess on a thievery when I'm an honest person?
I'm not going to confess on the thievery, even if it means I get nothing otherwise.
Rabbi Yossi psychological analysis of the mind of a thief.
Right.
You know, the mind of a thief is such, he doesn't mind confessing that he fabricated the truth. He's a thief anyway, right? He lied to begin with. But what will motivate him if it hurts him in his pocket? You know, but in the case of the person who's the rightful owner, you know, he's not going to come forward and admit that he lied. You know,
I would if it means I can't get my money anyways.
but again, the thief, we have to enter into the mind of the thief. Rabbi Yossi is saying that there's a greater chance that the thief will confess. He's a thief to begin with, so all he wants is his money back. Right. But the Gemara is saying that in the second answer, the Gemara, which is called Inami, the Gemara is saying that in this case of Manashlishi, the best way to go, even for Rabbi Yossi's perspective, would be Yachloku. But Rabbi Yossi, for the sake of the ultimate truth, he felt that he has a method that's much better than Yachloku. Yachloku is the second, is a backseat position. Yemuna, where clearly, or hopefully I should say at least, the entering into the mindset of the thief, he's not a stupid idiot. He's going to come forward and say, give me my mana and let me run with it, because otherwise he's minus a mana. So Rabbi Yossi feels that that's going to replace the psak which should have been. And what's the psak that should have been? Would have been Yachlok.
Is that Inami?
The Inami, yeah. Then I'll get back to the first there.
Wait,
we have to make sure we're on the same
right here.
On the same page.
Okay. Got it.
Yeah, it's right below Tosis below. So I'm just saying that in that Inami, as opposed to the first answer, which we'll get back to again in a second, the Gemara is now reinterpreting Rabbi Yossi. Again, the first answer of the Gemara and Rabbi Yossi is that there's a real problem here with Yachloku. There's a real problem with Yachloku. But now, in the second answer, no. Yachloku is smooth sailing. Rabbi Yossi is very much on board, very comfortable with Yachloku. In other words, in Hilchas Psak, the rules of Psak dictate Yachloku. Why? Because we're in a state of Marvan Amuta B'Safek. The only thing is that Yachloku admits that, we're not really necessarily addressing the problem itself. We have not really clarified who is the rightful owner. We think maybe, they both picked up the talus at the same time. If we could find a method by which we could get to the ultimate truth, instead of this kind of, fallback, fake position of Yachloku, that will replace Yachloku. But Yachloku is always hiding in the shadows, lurking in the shadows, ready to come out, because that's the primary psak in this. So Nalagmara says, well, let's see, can we apply Yehemunach and gain our ultimate goal of Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof in the case of Manashlishi? Can we do so in the case of Shnayim Oksum? So Gemara says, we have a very successful attempt at reaching ultimate truth in the case of Manashlishi, but we don't have such a parallel case in the Talis, because even if there's a rabbi in the Talis, why would he be motivated to come forward and admit that he is a rabbi when status quo is Yemunach? What's out there? What does he lose? What kind of knas has he suffered? To what extent have we heard him in his pocket by paskining Yemunach? Zilch. Yemunach doesn't cause him any sort of loss. Why? Because we're dealing with a case of someone who, to begin with, had nothing in this talus, if he's a thief. The first answer of the Gemara, let's go backwards, is a whole different answer. And that is that Rabbi Yossi is really inhibited about Yachloku. And that's what forced him to suspend the rule of Yachloku in the case of Manashlishi. Rabbi Yossi really objects to Yachloku. Why? Because in Yachloku, you are basically giving half the talus that belongs to someone else. Again, the Gemara is going to now give an answer that it's not so, right? But let's be a little bit naive about it to understand the Gemara's position. The Gemara is saying, well, you know what Rabbi Yossi is saying? I'd love to go with Yachloku, but Yachloku is not even an option. Because Yachloku, by definition, entails taking money out of the pocket of one person and giving it to someone else who's a thief. Yeah. That's not something a peasant could allow. That's a luxury that peasant cannot enjoy. So the Gemara says, you know what? Here's the difference between Manashlishi and Shnayim Ochsim Batal Simon Shlishi, Rabbi Yossi realizes that Yachloku is not an option, Yeimunach is an option, and Beis Din is sort of frozen in its tracks. They cannot move forward because they have no rayas neither to this muksok nor to that muksok. But they know that one of them is a Ramai. And since they know a woman is a Ramai, the psak for Avadai Ramai and Achluki Yecholu Yosemis, we saw it already Rashi up front in the case of Ani Omer Agtia, is going to be Yeimunach Ad Sheyavo L'Yom. Masha Enkein, in contrast, the case of Shnayim Ochsim V'Talis, there it's quite possible that they both picked up the Talis simultaneously. And there's no Ramai whatsoever. They're both naively, you know, admitting the truth. And they think that, you know, they got there first, but that's a mistake that anyone could make, you know, when he grabs onto talis. But each one has half the talis. You know what? Here, Rabbi Yossi will agree that we can apply the principle of Yachlok. Now, I want to present to you the Rashba. The Rashba says the following. It would seem from the Gemara that in a case of Avadei Ramai, the principle that should apply is Yeimunah. Now, in the case of Av Mishnah, Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis, where the Mishnah says Yachloku B'Shvua, it would seem, B'Pashtus, that Av Mishnah applies straight across the board, meaning there's no qualification. And the din would be the same, even if one of them is a Vadei Ramai. Now, exactly what would be a case of a Vadei Ramai in Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis? Let's say in Mekach Umemkar, for example, right? To whom did the Mocher sell the Talis? Did he sell to Reuven or did he sell to Shimon? You know, Shimon knows very well that Reuven paid the money for this Talis. So there's a Vadei Ramai. Why did the Mishnah say Shnayim Ochsim Vitalis Yachloku as an absolute statement? It's a rule that knows no exception. Maybe in the case of a Vadei Ramai, we should suspend the principle of Yachloku if our Mishnah is meant to square off with Rabbi Yossi. That's the first part of the Rashba's presentation. Then the Rashba goes on, and he mentions Rabbi Yochanan. Rabbi Yochanan, in the previous sugya, claims that they instituted the Shvua as a rabbinic enactment in order to inhibit people from grabbing onto someone else's talis. So it seems from Rabbi Yochanan clearly that our Mishnah is even addressing a case where someone deliberately grabbed onto someone's talis. But again, you know, Rabbi Yochanan's shita is that Choshera Mamona, lo Choshera Shvuasa. So he's inhibited from taking a Shvua Sheker. But clearly you see, according to Rabbi Yochanan, they would talk about a case of someone who grabbed onto someone else's talis, deliberately claiming it's his. He's a no good thief. So the Rashba answers the following. Although it's true that according to Rabbi Yochanan, in a case of Shnayim Ochsim, even though there's a Vadei Ramai, we really know that somebody grabbed onto it, we'll still say Yachloku B'Shvua. When the Gemara says here that if there's a Vadei Ramai, then Rabbi Yossi says Yeimunach, that's only according to the Svar of the Maksha. The Maksha, who asks a stira from our Mishnah to Rabbi Yossi, is of the opinion that in the case of Mana Shlishi, it's considered that both of them are muhzakin. Why? Because the Nifkat, as we saw in Tosfos at the beginning of the Masechta, is holding on to the Mana Shlishi on behalf of the two mafkidim. And therefore the Gemara asks Akasha, why in our Mishnah do we say Yachloku B'Shvua, and in the case of Mana Shlishi, Rabbi Yossi says Yeimuna? If you ask me according to Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yochanan is saying that there's no two muhzakim because we believe that one of them just grabbed onto the other talis. So that one is certainly not a muhzak. You know, in the case of Mana Shlishi, there was a legality here. There was a legitimate way in which the Nifkad took on ownership of the, or possession, I should say, over the Mana Shlishi. So now the Gemara says, Tenach, everything that you've told me works out in the case of Metziah. Because in the case of Metziah, what we're going to say is that this method of Yemunach is not going to accomplish its goal. You know, you're not imposing a knas on someone to force him to come forward and confess his crime. But the mekach u'memkar, ma'ika l'memar, in the case of mekach u'memkar, where each one gave money, and one of them knows that he's a no good rami, you know, so Reuven gave money to buy this talis, and then Shimon comes along and gives money to buy the talis. Well, you know what? In this case, we can really motivate Shimon to come forward and confess his crime. Why? Because he paid money for this. And if we're going to award this talis to Reuven, if we're going to take the talis and we're going to put it in escrow, we're going to tie it up and lock it up under the Emunach, then the thief, that's Shimon in this case, he will lose something because he paid money for the talis.
So you're going to keep the money in escrow along with the talis, the whole package.
Correct, and that's going to motivate Shimon to come forward and say, I admit that the talis is not mine, but at least Chach, give me back the money that I paid for the talis. So there's a knas here and a hefset on his part. So why doesn't Rabbi Yossi agree that in this case, why doesn't the Mishnah agree that in this case we should hold like Rabbi Yossi and we should take the entire package and leave it in escrow, because there will be a hefset here to the thief. He's gonna be not only out the talis, he'll be out his money that he paid for the talis. So that itself should be a valid method of getting him to admit and confess his crime.
Can we say in the case of Mekach Memkar that if you picture two people standing at the counter and the mocher is standing behind the counter and he's got stuff up there and they pointed to it and said, I want that, and he takes it down, he puts it on the counter, and both of them push the money forward, and each one thinks that he brought that down for me.
Right. That I guess that could be a possibility.
That's sort of like Teravaihu, right, the same as the talis case.
Right, right. Maybe you're right. But I think in the classic case of Mekach u'Memkar, Shnayim Ochsim v'Talis, what happens is that Shimon, you remember the whole sugi about Shimon being moraheter, that Reuven will get reimbursement, then he'll sell the talis, so at the end of the day he won't lose anything. He wants to get the talis because he loves that talis, and so forth and so on.
He needs it right now, more than the other guy.
It seems factually that it's more likely that the more assumes that two people will grab something at the same time than two people will give somebody money at the same time.
And the Gemara assumes that what happened is that Shimon saw that Reuven gave money and he got there first, but Shimon says, I want this talis. So Shimon's going to fabricate a whole story after he gives the money.
He gave the 100 deliberately, is it done?
Right, and he's going to fabricate a whole story that he got there first.
Because he hopes the guy will get confused. No, not first. He gives the 100 to say, he knows the guy will get confused.
The Gemara assumes, Sam, I don't know if you were here for us, that the mocher has das for the first one who gave him the money. Shimon came in later, so really he doesn't have any rightful claim to that talis, because even though he paid for the talis,
but he claims that he gave the 200, right?
Not only that, he claims he gave the money for the talis, but he claims that Reuven's, I should call him Levi, maybe call him Levi, the mocher, sold him the talis. That's a fabrication.
Right,
he's
right.
A rami. He invented that story in order to hope to get this
and
talis.
And the seller will be confused with the 100 and 200.
Correct. And in fact, that's what happened. In a certain sense, he was very successful, this rabbi, in his cheshbon, because he got there fast enough so that when he threw his money down, the mocher was confused and he doesn't remember exactly who he paid. Again, according to the sheet of Tosus, he's not even believed to say he knows once he gave up the talis, but that's a different story. But now, what the Gemara is arguing is that let's apply the method of Rabbi Yossi of imposing a knas on the rami and getting him forward, you know, pushing him forward to to be motivated to confess his truth. So now what we can do is we can take not only the talis and put it in escrow, we can also take the money that the mocher received, put that all in escrow, and now the thief is going to certainly come forward and say, this is not a good thing. I'm losing my money. I'm not getting the talis. What have I gained from this? So at least I want to get my money back. So in that sense, he'll come forward and he'll confess the coup. Now we get to the sugya of chenvani al pinkasa. So the Gemara says that we have a machlokes between the Rabbanon and Rav Yossi in Manishlishi, and we had an issue about chenvani al pinkasa, and that was a machlokes between who was a benanas in the Chacham, if I remember correctly. Check me out on that. And there we know that somebody's lying. Either the chenvani is lying and he never paid the workers, or the workers are lying and they actually receive payment. And we're going to allow both the chenvani and the workers, the Paulim, to take a shvuas nishba and notel and force the balabayas who hired these Paulim to pay twice. Once to the chenvani who shelled out the money on his behalf, and a second time to the Paulim. So the Gemara asks the following question: Bein l'Rabbanon u bein l'Rav Yossi, whether you hold a Rabbanon in the Manashlishi, that only on the Manashlishi we say Yeimunach, or you hold a Rav Yossi and we say on all three Manas Yeimunach. Hasam gavi chenvani al pinkaso, de katani zenish bavenotel, the zenish bavenotel, maishna delo amrinon, nafke l'mamona, vibal habayis v'yeimunach, we know that someone's lying over here. Either Chenvani is lying or the Polim are lying. Why do we say in this case that each one is granted a right, a monetary right, to collect as he claims the money that's coming to him with a shvuah, that's called Nishba Menotel? Why not apply the principle of Yeimunach? And this is going to be true even according to the Rabbanan. Why? Because it's a Vade Ramai, correct? Yeah. And if it's a Vade Ramai, so why are you applying the principle of forcing the mocher to pay twice?
No.
I shouldn't say the mocher, I should say the balabais to pay twice. Why not simply say the following? That instead of forcing the balabais to pay twice, why not say Yeimunach? Now exactly what the Yeimunach will be on, I'm assuming here, let's see if I'm right, that the Eimunach will be on the amount of money that's under dispute, which would mean, let's say the Chenvani is claiming, I paid the workers 100. The workers are claiming, we never received 100. So there's 100 that either is coming to the Chenvani or to the Paul. So let's take that 100 and we'll put it in escrow. And then what's going to happen is the Ramai here is going to confess. But wait a minute, where does he take a loss over here? One second. Okay. I'm not finding the Rashi now. So let's try to figure this out without Rashi. You'll tell me if you find Rashi here. It says Nafke Limamona mi balabayis v'yemunach hachiyov elio. Okay, fine. So how much money are we going to put in the hands of Bezdin in this case? Again, if it's the, let's see, so the Chenvani,
it's some kind of timer, that's the Rashi you're looking for.
And does Rashi spell out what's going to motivate him to
confess? Shlichusa, didach abdi, v'nasati l'polech, mamon shetzivisani.
Right, no, that I understood, but I'm asking, how would Yeimunach motivate the thief to come forward? Because I don't understand, we just finished saying that you need a knas.
Frankly,
oh, just
the knas is on the Baba Bias. He's at fault here. Well, he's not at fault, but he believed both of them.
That's no, I problem. Understand what you're saying, but one of them is lying, correct? There's no reason why the Baal Bayis should be paying twice. We don't know who's lying. So the Gemara, if I understand correctly, the Gemara is saying this Vade Rama here, and even the Chachamim of Rabbi Yossi would agree that in this case, we should say, Yei Munach Atshiyov Elio. Now, one part of this I understand. What's happening here is that we're instituting a psak which is definitely going to benefit a Rama, right, as opposed to Shnai Mosim Vitalis. Correct? What does the Mishnah say? The Mishnah says that each one takes a Shvua, both the Chenvani and the Poel, and they both collect. There's a Rami here who's benefiting. You know, he's rejoicing in his success because he's collecting money that's not coming to him.
Right.
So the Chachamim would say that in such a case, we should apply the principle of Yei Munach Hatshiyov Elio. Because our hands are tied. There's no other possibility other than Yei Munach. We can't say Yachloku because, again, there's a Vade Ramai. We can't say Kol Yom Govar because each one has a Chazaka. So the only alternative that a Psakya should be Yei Munach Hatshiyov Elio, because the other option is to say that have the Mocher pay twice. And if you have the Mocher pay twice, then the thief is getting away with murder. You know, he's collecting money that's not coming to him. Maybe the Gemara is not going into the whole discussion about whether or not Yei Munach will motivate the thief to confess his crime. That approach, that logic fits for Rabbi Yossi. What Al Gemara wants to point out here is that even the Rabbanan of Rabbi Yossi would apply the principle of Yei Munach here under their rules and regulations, which means in a case where you're awarding money and giving it to the hands of the Rami, we cannot apply anything but Yei Munach Hatshiyov Elio. Again, you could say Beis Din should be Mesalik themselves, but that's only if there's no Muchzakus.
The Baal Bayis is obligated him. He's obligated to pay the Poel. That's his mitzvah. He has to pay the Poel. He took advantage of a situation where he could get the Chenvani to front the money,
and he believed
the Chenvani.
Right, that's going to be the Gemara's answer. I'm just trying to work out the Havamin of the Gemara. Oh. What was the premise of the Havamin that we cannot possibly enforce a situation of Psak where the Mocher is going to lose, and one of these two gentlemen, who's an absolute total thief, is going to gain money that's not coming to him? That undermines the whole principle of Yei Munach Hatshiyov Elio. What was the principle? We cannot, basically, cannot award money to someone who's a ganav. Again, we don't know which of the two Baal Yedidim is a ganav, but one of them is a ganav. The only time we can apply a principle other than Yei Munach is when we believe that somehow this will serve the cause of justice. Because, let's say, in the case of Shai Mox and Vitalis, each one grabbed onto half the talis, they may have picked it up simultaneously. But in the case of Avade Ramai, we cannot award the money to Avade Ramai. Again, we may not know who is the Avade Ramai. Now the Gemara is going to answer what you said here, that you know, there's no reason why the Chenvani should take a loss, there's no reason why the Polim should take a loss, and therefore we're not going to apply the principle of Yei Munach. But I'm just pointing out that I think the Havamina here would not square with Rabbi Yossi in the second pshat. Rabbi Yossi in the second pshat would only apply Yei Munach if there's a hefseh to the Rami. And how do you generate a hefseh to the Rami by saying Yei Munach? In this case, Yei Munach doesn't cause any hefseh to the Rami. He's back to square one. So that's not going to motivate him to confess his crime. But I think that the whole thrust of this Gemara is the Rabbanan of Rabbi Yossi. The Rabbanan of Rabbi Yossi say that it's impossible for Beis Din to issue a psak which will benefit a Rami. And there's no question that will benefit the Rami. That's intolerable. And that's against the Mishnah of Chenvani al Pinkaso, because we're definitely awarding money to a Rami, a Gan. Okay, Rabbi, so I would like to take a break here. If somebody happens to have a pencil, I would just...
Not a pen.
I like to use a pencil. I don't know, it's just a...
I'll snore one for you from the
office. Yeah, no, I think I have one here. Let's see. Oh, okay. Yeah. here. So that's where we're up to.